Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Tonight, we've got a great show for you, how to understand those with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And with us in our virtual studio is our Lorena Averda and Dan Staub. And tonight's going to be fascinating. Lorena is she works in the field of romance, if you will. And Dan is he specializes in improvisation. I'm not going to tell you any more. I'm going to tease you with a little bit just because we've got a really, really fun show. This show was actually brought to us by Dr. Ari Tuckman. He had seen these two do some demonstrations and some stuff about conversations, which we're going to kind of cover earlier, and called me up and said, you've got to do this. So thanks, Dr. Tuckman. Real quickly, tonight is Tuesday, March the 14th in the year 2017 at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're off our normal Wednesday schedule because of a last-minute conflict that I have. But needless to say, we are here and ready to go. Real quickly, some announcements. The Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Coaches Organization Conference is April the 27th through the 30th. They have a special website for it. It doesn't come off the top of my head, but if you go to ADHDcoaches.org, you can link to it. Also, the CHAD Conference, not to really start planning for that. That's in Atlanta, Georgia this year from November the 9th to the 11th. To learn more about that, go to chadd.org. Apologize, everybody. I'm tripping over my words tonight. We're really proud to have a relationship with CHAD. They're the largest not-for-profit organization that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD. And tonight's show is actually being brought to you by them. And they've got a quick tip that we want to run before we get into the meat of the show. So here we go.
ADHD challenges continue into adulthood for 35 to 65% of children with ADHD. Finding strengths, building resilience, and learning to self-advocate will improve your child's chances of succeeding in college, vocational school, or the workforce. Learn how to prepare your child for life beyond high school at www.helpforadhd.org. That's www.help4adhd.org.
Thank you again, Chad, for your continued support. And if you're listening to the show and you're part of the ADHD community, you need to consider joining Chad. They've got a lot of great member benefits, but the most important reason is because they speak with one voice and they need money to run that organization. There's tons of volunteers that participate in it, but they speak with one voice and they advocate on your behalf. So it's a great reason to become a member. Real quickly, again tonight, I thought this show's a little bit fascinating. We like to pay attention to attention. That's the meat heart of our show. And today's a little bit kind of different show than what we've done in the past. And we're going to pay attention to attention in conversations in as much as learning how to work with those with ADHD in a more positive light. It's a little off the beaten path from what we normally do, but I think there's a lot of nuggets in here and something to be learned. So with that, let's roll the tape. We hope you enjoy the show.
We're here with Lorena Averda. She is a doctoral candidate and a sex educator. She came from Mexico to the United States with a Fulbright scholarship in 2012. She's presented workshops at national and international sex conferences and is currently our co-chair of the National Sex Ed Conference. She also works as a volunteer at the Mexican Consulate of Philadelphia, facilitating workshops in condom use, HIV prevention, and contraception. She hosts educational radio and TV shows about sex and rights, about sexuality, gender equality, and relationships on her Spanish language Facebook page with more than 83,000 followers. Her website is Lorena, Lorena Averda, Olvera, .com. We also have Dan Staub, who is an improvisational teacher and performer. He's currently the artistic director at Better Than Bacon Improv, an award-winning troupe-based out of suburban Philadelphia. He also teaches improvisation classes and workshops, primarily focusing on the power of active listening, both on stage and in our professional lives. You can learn more about Dan at betterthanbaconimprov.com. And with that, Lorena and Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So our listeners out there, this is kind of interesting that I've got a sex educator and an improv comedian kind of on our show kind of going, what's this all about? What does it have to do with ADHD? And originally was introduced to the two of you through Ari Tuchman, who's a dear friend of mine, who we've had on the show gazillions of times, and Ari knows how I like to pay attention to attention. And to me, this is a great show because we're going to talk about improv and conversations and how we actually pay attention to attention. And the concept here is kind of open up our listeners' eyes and learn how to listen a little bit better to understand those with ADHD. So I think I want to start by, Dan, can you talk to us about active listening in the context of improv?
Sure. So a lot of people tend to think of improvisation. They think of Whose Line Is It Anyway? And they think the skills that they see in improv all have to do with wit or the ability to think really fast. And there's an element of that, but really what makes a good improviser, which can certainly extend to our everyday lives, is the ability to listen. It's all about active listening. It's about suppressing that voice of judgment that normally is an inhibitor for us to be able to have true, authentic conversation and for us to be able to listen and react authentically with whoever we may be talking to, whether it's a life partner, whether it's a colleague, a friend, what have you. It's a byproduct of being in our own heads. What active listening with it and the concepts that we're going to discuss today, what it really helps you do, like I said, is kind of suppress that pesky little voice of judgment, open your mind, open your ears, so you can truly not only receive the message that's being presented to you, but to be able then in turn to respond authentically, which obviously, hopefully, leads to true, genuine interaction, and it certainly lessens the chances for misunderstanding and for misinterpretation. Improv, you know, I started doing improv for the performance aspect. You know, I love being on stage. Yep. I thought it was all about the ha-ha stuff, and it certainly is when it comes to the performance, but it's affected my life. The tenets of improvisation have affected my life in so many positive ways that go far beyond a stage. And that's really what I try to do when I teach my classes. I focus on the stage aspect, but I really try to show how the power of active listening can really impact us in our everyday lives.
And I think you said suppress the voice of judgment that's in our head. That is so easy to say. Mm-hmm. It's so hard for people to get. I do a lot of mentor coaching, particularly in groups where I'm working with coaches and I'm trying to critique them on their coaching. And one of the things that I've come to articulate is coaching is very much improv. You totally have to, you cannot respond to the person until they finish listening. And if you're really good, it's almost like you listen for them to give you the question to ask them next. And I got to imagine that in order to get that voice a judgment out of your head, you really almost have to react when the person finishes in order to be good at it. And to me, this is a neat little exercise that one would practice actually to really practice the art of getting out of their head. Would you agree with that?
100%, absolutely. Because if I'm, for example, if somebody is talking with me and I'm thinking, if I'm anticipating how I'm going to respond, either because I disagree with something they're saying, or I want to make my point, I inherently am not listening because I am so focused on how I'm going to respond that I'm probably missing many crucial key components to the message that is being conveyed to me, and which in turn is a form of judgment. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a negative judgment, but I am trying in my own way to sort of force my will, so to speak, and maybe not the best term, but really I want to get my message across more than anything else if I'm acting in that way. For an improviser to be successful, for example, if I'm with a scene partner on stage and I have this brilliant idea that in my mind is a brilliant idea, but my scene partner speaks first and says something that's completely antithetical or different to what I'm thinking, I have to have a willingness to throw that idea away, no matter how good or great it is. Doing that on stage has allowed me to do in my real life is to transfer that to the point where I can completely focus on what the person is saying to me by not anticipating, by not judging, by not trying to plan what I'm going to say. And like you said, then in turn, I can respond, like I've said before, I can respond authentically to what that person is telling me.
I love how you articulate willingness to throw that idea away that's really there. Now, Lorena, this is fascinating to me, and I'm thrilled as a sex educator you're coming on. You and Dan are going to kind of demonstrate some conversations here in a little bit, because rather than do this with ADHD, I thought I would do it talking about sex, I think is very one of those very private type things that people don't totally get as an attention coach. It's kind of funny because I've actually coached some people briefly kind of around sex. It's fascinating to me because everybody assumes that their partner's having the same experience they do. And to me, there's different plumbing, there's different hormones. It couldn't be any different. So there's a lot of like kind of stopping and really listening to understand the person. Can you just tell me a little bit about your work with sex education and how you came to work with Dan and how this is an active listening is a tool for you?
Yeah, well, look, I am not from the United States. I am from Mexico. So when I came here, I wanted to feel free. I mean, I've been working in the radio for more than 8 years in Spanish. But in English, I was sometimes afraid to be presenting in front of the audience. So I came to Dan to, like, feel free and learn how to speak in front of a big audience, etc. And then after I took, like, his intro to improv, I was like surprised how that changed like my experience as an international student, but also how I could use that for sexuality education. So yes, that was a great way to combine those two careers into one. So for example, what Dan was saying about these being present, when we talk about sexuality, many people are already thinking and they are concentrating on a specific outcome. So I'm talking about a specific topic, gender, whatever. And the other person who I'm talking to, they are already thinking what they are going to respond to me regarding gender. They have a specific outcome where the conversation is going about gender. And the point of being present in improv, it is a lack of self, myself, and the other person's judgment, and also the willingness to let your own agenda go. So in that, it's very important to be flexible and to adapt and to be open to the conversation that is coming, that sometimes it can be a challenging conversation in the case of sexuality. So we have to be willing to take risks, to listen to what the other person is bringing to the table and complement what they are bringing, not specifically trying to impose an idea or change the other person's agenda or idea.
Yep. So I tell you what I want to do is I want to go to a commercial break. When we come back, you guys can demonstrate three conversations. I think it's called the no conversation, the yes but conversation, and the yes and. And I'm anxious to hear you guys do it so we can kind of like, these are lenses for us to look through to kind of examine kind of what's going on. So we'd like to do that when we come back from the break. Everybody, before we do, learn more about Dan by going to betterthanbaconimprov.com. And for Lorena, go to her website at LORENAOLVERA.com. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dana and Lorena, and we're having a great conversation about active listening and using the improvisation skills as the mindset to kind of get into that and really, a lot of conversations really mostly about listening and active, and I know as coaches we do this. Dan, you've got some these conversations that you guys can demonstrate to kind of help us hear the power. Can you just kind of take it from here and kind of walk us through these kind of one at a time?
Sure. So the first conversation Lorena and I are going to have, so for example, I'm going to suggest some kind of activity that she and I can do together today. Every time, so after I make my initial suggestion, Lorena's going to respond with the word no. She's not really going to give a reason why. She's just going to shoot it down, but she's then going to come up with her own suggestion for what she wants to do. I, in turn, am going to reply no. Again, not giving a reason why. And we'll just go back and forth a couple of times to demonstrate the point, and we'll sort of break it down after that. So Lorena, let's go to the beach today.
No. Let's go to the forest.
No. Let's go to the park.
No. Let's go to the movies.
No. Let's go to the mall.
No. Come to my house and let's watch Netflix.
Okay, so you sort of get the point there of what happened at that point. So at least with the no's, and we'll sort of elaborate upon this further as we make our way through all three concepts, but as you can see with the no, we're not going anywhere. We're just sort of going back and forth with our ideas, and hopefully you can kind of see, and this is not really manufactured, this is just how it happens. The conversation gets slower and slower because we're very deeply in our heads. I mean, I've been doing this for a decade plus, and I was struggling to come up with something, even after running this activity hundreds of times. So yep. That's sort of breaking down the no. Lorena, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that.
Yeah, exactly. When you say no, you stop the conversation right there. And when someone says no, they are sometimes really not paying attention what the other person is saying. So Dan was saying I have very good options, but because I was in my mind, no, I really want to do that, I'm not going to accept what Dan is doing. So it's about collaboration. So we're going to do
Absolutely.
Something different now.
What we're going to do is tonight.
It's kind of funny because as I began to, like, the third or fourth no, all I can think of mind, this is a road to nowhere.
Yes, literally a road to nowhere. And again, I don't want to speak for Lorena, but I felt it. I felt that even knowing exactly what we're going to be doing, I felt we were absolutely headed down that road to nowhere. So what we're going to do with this next conversation, similar concept, I'm going to suggest some kind of activity of what we're going to do today. Lorena's response is going to begin with the words, yes, but. And then she's going to sort of describe what the but, so to speak, is all about. I, in turn, am going to again respond with the same thing, yes, but, and sort of add what my thoughts are to that part of the conversation. And again, we'll just go back and forth a few times until comes time to break down the conversation. So,
sounds good.
Lorena, let's go to the beach.
Yes, but this weekend.
Yes, but I can only do it on Saturday.
Yes, but we would need to leave, like, midday.
Yes, but we would have to be back by about 8.
Yes, but I need to bring my boyfriend with us.
Yes, but my car only has 2 seats.
Yes, but I really want to bring him.
Okay, so we'll stop that there. So the way I describe yes, but, it's just a nicer way of saying no. It's really no different. And as you could probably see, you start with the concept and it kind of gets narrower and narrower until there's really no room to go. We pretty much ran out of space. We started with a general umbrella concept of going to the beach, and then we were limiting each other and limiting ourselves to the point, at most, if we are going to the beach, we're probably spending about 5 minutes right now. So yes, but just becomes much more limiting and restrictive in terms of really advancing anything.
It's kind of funny because it gives the illusion. It's like the no was a direct, I mean, that was a dead end immediately. The yes, but, I mean, it was constraining you to the point in time you were going to get to the dead end. It just took a little bit longer to get there. And I can definitely see there was a definitely heaviness in that conversation. Not quite like the no, but you ended up in the same place, and it just didn't seem to be helpful in it at all.
Yeah, and if you notice, we were not really listening to each other because we were trying to express things that maybe they were important for us. Like, I was trying to invite my boyfriend, but in the moment that Dan stops, like, seeing how important that's for me and he stops listening and he doesn't have the ability to be present in what we are discussing, then is when there's another but, and then as Dan was explaining, there is just a very tiny possibility of really hanging out in that example.
Yeah. It's funny because I didn't pick up on it until you said that, but you're right. I mean, he's hearing the words, but he's really not getting the message and buying into it. So it's kind of like what's in a bigger picture. I can see how you're really not listening in to a sense. So all right, so why don't we try the next one? Compare that one.
Cool. So our next concept is, again, same thing. I'm going to suggest some kind of activity. We'll probably stick with the beach concept. And Lorena's response to that activity is going to begin with the words, yes, and. And she's going to add something onto my initial idea. I, in turn, am also going to respond with yes, and I'm going to add to her idea. And again, we'll go back and forth a few times with that. So, Lorena, let's go to the beach.
Yes! And let's bring my dog.
Yes, and I'll bring my dog.
Oh, yes. And they are going to be able to play together in the sand.
Yes, and then when it's nighttime, we can all run out in the ocean and just have a great time.
Yes, and after running in the ocean, we can start fire.
Yes, and we'll invite all the other beachgoers and pet owners to have one big animal-human bonfire of fun and awesomeness.
Yes, and I'll bring marshmallows to put in the fire.
Yes, and we'll roast those marshmallows.
Yes, and we can invite people that are walking by to join our bonfire.
Okay, great. So as you can see with the yes and, you start with an idea and it keeps building. The entire tenet of yes and, it's about listening and reacting. It's agreeing with the concept and building on top of it. And you just have to build one little thing. We don't have to go from point A to point Z. We can just each sort of brick by brick, layer by layer, build this collaborative concept of what we're going to do together. And what it allows us to do is to fully actively listen, because if I'm going to authentically respond to Lorena's idea, I have to be intently listening to her. Because if I'm about to, again, infuse my own idea or drive my own idea, I'm going to miss the subtext of what she's saying. And when that happens, the whole conversation can fall apart. So for this to really work and for this to truly be effective, it has to be a complete sort of mental release where I'm not thinking of anything else but what Lorena is saying to me and vice versa.
Yeah, for me, that rule of the yes and teaches us how to collaborate with others. because we are not trying to create a competition of who is doing more or who is suggesting better ideas. No, I'm taking all Dan's ideas and I'm collaborating with him and bringing other ideas that are going to be working together. You know, it is like what I think like social brainstorming.
Well, it was fascinating, Dan, as I began to listen to it. You know, I don't know if you really don't have control of the conversation, but you are kind of creating something new. And you do, you have to listen to the, you can't say no, you can't be negative towards that concept. You actually have to validate what they're saying and kind of add to it in your own way. If you can't do that, it seems to me that you would run into a dead end there too, because you're, any time that you're not going with this is you're turning it back to your agenda. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, because we could have an entire yes and conversation going. The second anybody would infuse a no or somebody would infuse a yes but, it's like hitting a reset button on that entire conversation. We're just going right back to the beginning. In order to really make this work, you said it exactly, you have to be able to intently listen to one another and really just free yourself from any preconceived thoughts or notions and free yourself from the thought of having to push my agenda or get my idea in there. Yep. Because, again, if I'm doing that, if I'm trying to push my own agenda, then I'm not listening to her. And the other beauty of yes and is you can start with a small concept, and like I talked with the layer by layer aspect, it can just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the possibilities are endless. Whereas again, with the yes but and the no, you either don't even get off the starting line or you have to start all over again the second that comes into play.
Wow.
And another
go ahead.
But see a relationship also that your program has with ADHD, and that is like a lot of people with ADHD, they have problems like picking up on social clues. And in the world of improv, that is one important thing to do. We have to be picking up of social cues. For example, in this case, Dan was saying things that were important for him, and I have to be picking up of those things and collaborate with his idea. And so you have to be catching up all these little things that he's providing me, you know? So I think that practicing, it's not only like you feel like free, you feel this stress, but you are also like practicing listening skills, paying attention, and exercising your memory, because you have to be creative.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tell you what, I want to go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about how this is, because when you're using it in a situation with other people and really trying to build on that, because one of them is just the act of listening side, but also the positive result out of this, because you can stand up on stage and just, you know, do an improv and just, you know, create something funny. But in an area of an outcome, like we're going to sit down and we're going to have a conversation about sex or something like that, I'm just very interested in your thoughts about how that takes a relationship or two people or somebody in a positive direction. Before we go to break, everybody, you need to check out their websites. It's Lorena's website. It's LORENALOLBERA.com. And Dan's is BetterThanBaconImprov.com. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation about active listening, and we're here talking about this as different ways to pay attention. We actually had a demonstration before the last break of different ways to pay attention to a conversation, and the idea here is to really kind of help people understand what's going on a little bit more. And you know, one of the things to me is that yes and conversation, by definition, opens your mind and is a learning tool. You let go of your agenda, if you will, and you begin to do this. And if you're truly going to continue, you actually have to have an open mind. In your world in sex education and kind of work in this space, can you tell us about that? I mean, does it lead to new learning? I'm just kind of curious about when you're working with it.
Yeah, of course. So, of course, like the exercise we did was like very direct, saying yes and. In real life, you don't have to say the yes and. It is more the listening what the other person is bringing. And in my world of sexuality, you are going to have people who are like in the liberal area and people that have more conservative ideas. And if I, as a sex educator, want to bring sex education to those people who are in the more conservative area, if I just come and I say, well, this is what I'm bringing and I don't care what you think, then I'm not going to provide anything to them. So if someone is like, okay, but I want this type of sex education, and I have to be listening to them, what are their needs and where they are coming from, so I can create an appropriate and effective program for them. But if I'm coming with this idea of this is the specific outcome I want them to learn this and this and this, and this goes all against their ideas, then I'm not going to be able to bring this program to them. I mean, in that case, it's going to depend. There are going to be sex educators that they're like, I don't do that type of work. I just work with communities who are open to my perspective. But other sex educators like me, like I'm from Mexico, I come from a very traditional and conservative and Catholic type of view. So if I come back with that idea, I'm not going to be able to do anything, you know? So I have to be willing to let my own agenda, my ideal agenda, a little bit, so I can really listen to their needs, be present, stop my judgment.
Is it a tool that you can use where people will? It's kind of a. I'm going to use the word a negotiation tool. I don't really mean that, but is it a tool that you use? Because if you're going to actively listen, and in the yes and concept, you're going to have to kind of come together as a result of that. Is that an inaccurate statement?
Yeah. I think it's a very accurate statement. For example, I have to tell you, like when I was in Mexico, I was invited to present a workshop in a religious school. And they asked me specific stuff, and I listened to their needs, and I accept their ideas, and I gave extra to what they were asking, respecting their own limits. And I was able to present in a church about sexuality. But it was like a very being present moment when we discussed, when we planned this workshop for their community. So, yes, I think that improv can be used any moment in your life, like sex education, like in the school, when you are teaching, if you are using the yes and conversation, you can create things with your students. If I just come from a no perspective as a professor, I'm just going to stop creativity from my students. If I suggest yes and, they are going to bring things to the table. I don't know if you responded your
So, and Dan, you do performance work, but you also teach this as a skill to people out there. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience at, you know, when you teach this, how they actually use that to move them forward?
Sure. So when I first started, like I said, when I first started performing it, it was for, or learning it, I should say, it was to learn how to do the whose line is it anyway type stuff. And then even when I first started teaching it, my thought at the time was, oh, these are people like me who wanted to get up there and just try to, quote unquote, learn how to be funny. And then for the first few semesters that I taught this class, the number of people who signed up for that reason was maybe one or two. The people that were signing up were the ones that either had a fear of public speaking. I had a father and son take the class because they wanted to communicate better. People who just had crippling stage fright or just social anxiety. And so my class started to evolve and adapt where I'm still teaching the performance aspect, but I'm utilizing these concepts that we're talking about, and I tie it into how we can use it in our everyday lives, in our relationships, in our workplace. And it's been pretty amazing to see the impact that this art form and this tool, like, it's profound. I mean, I've had students who have either never stepped foot on stage before or had just ungodly, crippling anxiety who are now either performing on a regular basis or who write to me and say, I'm listening to my partner better. I'm more open-minded. I find that my life has changed. And I think so much of that really has to do with this yes and concept, because it's, like I said, it extends well beyond the stage. It really is a way to just listen and communicate and adapt. And I think that's a key component we might not have talked about too much so far, is adaptability. And in terms, within the context of my classes, I can safely say no two of my classes from semester to semester have ever been the same, because thankfully, having adapted to the yes and mindset of my own and having evolved as a teacher, I have to be attentive to where my students are. And some students want more of the performance aspect. Some students don't, or I should say some classes don't. Some classes struggle with a particular concept that other classes excel in. And so if I were to be rigid in what my curriculum was and how I was going to teach it, I wouldn't really be effectively doing what my job is to do. So every class I've done has required some adaptation to what my original plan was. And sometimes that's literally in the middle of the lesson. Like, I may come into a lesson and say, okay, I'm going to do A, B, and C. And then I assess where they're at and say, you know what? Tonight's not the time for C. We got to either jump back to B or do something else that make sure that we're on the same page. When Lorena and I did this workshop in December for the sexuality conference, we adapted our workshop on the fly based upon some of the feedback that we were getting. And it was all positive feedback, but again, it was a matter of assessing where the students were. We gave ourselves pretty much a skeleton outline of what we were going to do, but we did allow ourselves that flexibility. And and being able to listen and adapt really, I think, helped best effectively communicate what we were trying to convey to the participants in that workshop.
So if let's say hypothetically we've got a couple, one has ADHD and one doesn't have ADHD, and they're struggling with some of this stuff, how would the conversation maybe be where they sat down and said, we want to improve this, and they're going to use the improv and that yes and kind of concept to kind of come together? This might be kind of a difficult question to answer because we're making this up on the fly, but any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think one of the things I always stress, and when I say this, I never mean this as an insult, and I always say this to my students as well, is that whole concept of keep it simple. So if you were to adapt this yes and conversation, you know, as a couple or in a work environment, sort of do what you know, what Lorena and I did in that yes and exercise, it was just one suggestion each back and forth. We didn't try to drive in 2, 3, 10 different concepts that we wanted to do to build this activity. It was, I have one idea. She has one idea to build on top of that. I have one idea to build on top of that. And the simplicity in that back and forth makes it relatively easy to focus and to be really in tune with what the other person is saying. So, and it's, when I said the whole thing about suppressing that voice of judgment and freeing your mind, that's so much easier said than done. And that's not going to be achieved in one modeled yes and conversation or anything like that. But it's sort of, if you take that concept and try it and really, and the other thing I say too is the beauty of improv is that it teaches you to accept failure in all forms. And because from a stage standpoint, my job as an improv comedian is to go up and make people laugh. But since this is an art form where I'm just going up and making it up on the spot, not everything's going to work. And you learn how to accept that. And I think within the concept of relationships, we all have our faults. We all have our failures. We all have things that just don't work. And when you learn to not beat yourself up over it or be angry at your partner over it, and you learn to sort of accept those and see them as learning experiences, I think that's another way you can apply the tenets of improvisation to the concepts of relationships.
So I'm listening to what you just said because it was very helpful to kind of keep it simple. So I'm just going to think through some. Imagine that you've got an ADHD couple and the ADHD person just leaves the towels on the floor all the time, never seems to hang it out, annoys the other person. And you agree to sit down and talk, and the ADHD person says, well, you know, we agree that we need to improve this situation. Then the other person, well, yes, and we need to do it in an amenable way. It seems to me that if you just take something like that and you begin to address it in a yes and go back and forth, that over a period of time, you're actually listening. The ADD person is like, I don't think about it. Well, yes, I know you don't think about it, and maybe we should consider, you know, a hook in the inside of the shower. Yeah, a hook on the inside of the shower with a beep run or something like that in a positive way to kind of resolve the towel situation. Would that make a little sense to you, or am I off track a little bit?
No, that makes perfect sense, because I think if you, again, look back at the conversation Lorena and I had, no and yes, but, besides just in and of itself sort of having a negative connotation, the conversations I don't even think sounded as pleasant. You sort of heard the struggle and you heard the underlying negativity. And even if it was a completely manufactured environment, it still had that at its core, a certain level of negativity. Whereas yes and is sort of embracing a much more positive mindset. And like you said, when you say, hey, let's add a hook on there, or hey, let's do this, it's just even the whole concept of let's, it's collaborative.
Yep.
Together, let's do this. It's not pointing a finger at you. It's not saying what I can do better or worse. It's let's do this together.
So I want to stop here for a second. You want to say something, Lorena?
Yeah, I was going to say that, for example, when you do it for performance like Dan does, and like I did when I was taking his class, you try to do stuff. So if you want to look good, you do it. What you have to do is make your partner look good, you know? If I want to look good because he is looking good. And in the sense of our relationship, if I want to feel good, I want my partner to feel good the same, you know? And so when I'm thinking that by my partner feeling good, I'm going to feel good, that rule that applies to improv can be applied to the relationship itself. So that's what I was thinking.
I'm really grateful that you
I'm really grateful that you said that the way it is, because as for my listeners out there, you're listening to the show and you might be scratching your head going, what does this have to do with ADHD? And I, even while I was listening and I was trying to run through some scenarios, I kept running into the butt in the twisting the conversation. And we're not going to solve the world today, but, you know, Dan, you teach people and they practice it, because this is an unnatural conversation because you can't control the agenda. And I think the big takeaway from this show is when you get into some conversations and you begin to think, I need to focus on yes and. And when you feel that anxiety that you can't do that, that's evidence that you're in your head and you're driving your agenda and you're trying to control it and you're not listening to the other people. And so I'm not going to solve everybody's problem today, but this is an exercise I think that you can go and begin to witness when you're shutting down listening, because if you can't stick with a yes and you're going to a but or a no, or you're trying to change it, you're not truly listening to the other person. And that's the point of everything we do at Attention Talk Radio, is to pause and notice what's going on. And this is a great exercise to realize is that you're not actively listening. So I like your comments on that, because it's just a tool to catch yourself at first. Then you have to practice it and kind of go forward. Dan, does that make sense to you?
It makes total sense. I mean, you know, none of this is overnight. Like anything, you know, practice makes perfect. You don't become a Hall of Fame baseball player just by playing catch in the yard with your dad. You gotta work at it and work at it and work at it. And like I said, allowing yourself, you know, I mean, you can go to counseling, you can do all these different things, and those faults or, you know, those struggles that we go through are still going to appear, but those tools are there to help you improve. And when you sort of embrace the concept of yes and you embrace the concept of, okay, I'm just going to do a little bit better next time, a little bit better next time, eventually all of this becomes easier and almost second nature. And I am infinitely a better listener, a better partner, a better person since I started doing improv than when I was before. These concepts have absolutely changed my life for the better, and to the point that I can now pass that message along to people is one of the most fulfilling and empowering things I've ever been able to do.
It's funny, because as you described that about this, because I couldn't think of it, this is really kind of an attention exercise where you start conversations in that open mindset of about thinking that yes and mentality. First, you're going to feel some awkwardness to it, because you're not going to be able to control the agenda if you're in the yes and, but you do it over and over and over, it begins to open up your mind, which is the whole point of active listening. Step one is to realize you're not listening because you're trying to drive it, and to practice this over a period of time to open yourself up. So before we close this out, Lorraine, you got any other final comments?
So I think that in our lives, if we want to build cooperation, the most important thing is listen and be present. And those are two rules or two very important basic ideas of improv that we can apply in our life.
I couldn't tell you. That was the spectacular way to wrap this up. So, Dan, Lorraine, I can't thank you so much for coming on the show. It's just great.
Thank you very much. It's our pleasure.
Thank you.
So everybody, check out Dan's website, betterthanbaconimprov.com, or Lorena's website, LorenaOlvera.com. And with this, thanks for listening. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.